Next case is Sunage Co. versus Gonzalez. Ms. Cho.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Benita Huang Cho, and I represent Ms. Sunhee Co., the petitioner in this case. Your Honors, there are two issues in this case that we'd like to discuss before the Court. The first is that the Chicago immigration judge had no authority to reverse the decision of the Cincinnati immigration judge's decision to grant petitioner's motion to reopen. The second issue is that the Cincinnati IJ properly granted petitioner's motion to reopen because the NTA was deficient on its face and therefore precluded the entry of an in absentia deportation order. Turning to the first issue, 8 CFR 1003.23b1 unambiguously states that it is only the judge who made the original decision in the case that can make a decision as to whether or not the motion to reopen can be granted or denied.
But, you know, Ms. Cho, your argument, I think, proves too much. Things like that happen, and for administrative convenience, normally, whether it's immigration judges or other kinds of judges, you take it back to the first judge. But if that judge had dropped dead the day after the decision, the thing certainly could have been taken to a new judge. It's not like the proceedings end at that moment. And there are other reasons, thankfully, short of that, where things are occasionally administrative. Sometimes a new judge comes on board and they'll get a docket prepared for them. So it seems to me the absolute position you take really can't be sustained. Now, whether as a matter of proper law of the case the standards haven't been met here is a different point, but surely you can't mean that, you know, if the first judge is, you know, sent to Mars, it's still the case is just, you know, in limbo forever.
No, Your Honor, and of course there's a separate section that the government alludes to in its brief where the original immigration judge is unavailable, the chief immigration judge can then reassign the motion to reopen to another immigration judge. But that's not what the facts were in this case. There's nothing in the record to show that the Cincinnati IJ was unavailable, that he was either deceased or retired. So those aren't the facts in this case. Because the Cincinnati IJ was available, and because the Chicago IJ was not the judge that made the original decision in the case, it was impermissible under the regulations for him to adjudicate this motion to reopen.
Let me ask you how much notice Ms. Coe had that the Chicago immigration judge, instead of proceeding with the case on the merits, was going to reconvene at that hearing and instead address the motion to reopen.
She had no notice. It was the understanding of all the parties that the final hearing on the date where the Chicago IJ reversed the Cincinnati IJ's decision,
right,
it was supposed to be a hearing on the adjustment of status application.
So she had no opportunity to present any arguments she might have wished to present suggesting that reopening was inappropriate.
No, and counsel for Ms. Coe also requested that a short continuance be had so that they could brief up any issues that the immigration judge may have about the motion to reopen, but the Chicago IJ did not permit that.
Okay.
The Board of Immigration Appeals should have recognized the incongruity between the Chicago IJ's actions and what the Code of Federal Regulations states. It was not proper for the Chicago immigration judge simply to take matters into his own hands.
Okay. Can I ask you just one more factual question? When in January of 2000 she applies for reinstatement of the F-1 student status, which address does she put down? We have all this address confusion, which unfortunately, she could have done something about.
I believe that she used her current address, which I believe would be the 6520 North Pinecone Drive address.
So as of January 2000, at least one. Of course, the agency often, right hand sometimes doesn't know what the left hand is doing, but the agency had her correct address as of January 2000.
That's correct. So it's factually inaccurate on what the government says that she did not. She only revealed herself to the government subsequent to her marrying a U.S. citizen and having an approved immigrant visa petition. She did try to reinstate her status before she was even married to a U.S. citizen and before she had an approved immigrant visa. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the board in its decision does not address the inconsistency between the Chicago IJ's actions and the Code of Federal Regulations. Instead, the board uses the more amorphous legal concept of law of the case doctrine, or rather exceptions to the law of the case doctrine. In its decision, the board says that, well, normally, the Cincinnati IJ's decision was law of the case. The Chicago IJ should respect that decision. However, they say the board said there are exceptions to that law of the case doctrine. The board found that the exceptional circumstances in this case were that the Cincinnati IJ failed to issue a written decision on the motion to reopen that was opposed, and they also found that reopening was inappropriate. Petitioner argues that exceptional circumstances did not exist, which would require a departure from law of the case doctrine. The government cites Matter of Correa in its brief and states that under Matter of Correa, where a motion to reopen is opposed, the immigration judge should then issue a written decision. That is true. The Cincinnati IJ should have issued a written decision because the motion to reopen was opposed. However, all that Matter of Correa holds is that a written decision should be issued. It doesn't hold that failure to issue a written decision is exceptional circumstances. Matter of Correa doesn't hold that failure to issue a written decision qualifies as clear error.
So what do you do, remand it back there to get a written decision?
I guess that procedurally, that would be what would be acceptable in this case, that the Chicago IJ should have actually sent the case back to the Cincinnati IJ for a written decision on the case. In fact, the government has not cited any authority to show that the failure to issue a written decision constitutes exceptional circumstances which would permit a departure from law of the case doctrine. Turning to the second issue, reopening was appropriate in this case. The petitioner did, in fact, present a prima facie case for reopening. Petitioner's motion to reopen showed that the notice she received was deficient. Looking at Section 239A1 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, it carefully prescribes what must be contained in the notice to appear. At 239A1GI, it clearly requires that the NTA must include the time and place of proceedings.
But why isn't it enough just to say time and place to be determined, we'll tell you later?
Well, that's not what the statute says. If the statute did say the time and place to be time and place of the proceedings, or if one is provided, then we wouldn't have an argument for reopening. But
don't you think the gist of the statute, I mean, there's a statutory obligation to make sure the service knows where you are, you know, that you've given them a good address. That's a very common reasonable administrative requirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, simply because petitioner did not satisfy an address obligation doesn't cure defective notice. In this case, the statute clearly requires that the NTA include the time and place of proceeding.
Of course, somehow she gets the first notice going to Dorothy
right.
Lane. How does that happen?
What happened was the notice to appear was sent to the original address, but then it was forwarded to her at her new address. So she received the NTA because the NTA was forwarded to her new address. That's how she received the NTA.
And after that, the forwarding had expired, I suppose.
That's correct. Because the NTA was deficient on its face pursuant to the statute, it was proper for the Cincinnati IJ to rescind the in absentia order and reopen the case. Looking at Section 240B5C2 of the INA, it states that an in absentia order can be rescinded if the alien demonstrates that they did not receive notice pursuant to paragraph A1 or A2 of 239A. In this case, Ms. Coe did not receive notice pursuant to paragraph 1 because the NTA did not include all the statutory requirements for an NTA. Now, the government tries to argue that Ms. Coe didn't notify the court of her new address, and therefore she's not entitled to notice. But that's putting the cart before the horse. The NTA must include all the statutory requirements, regardless of the alien's address obligations under 239A1F. If it does, and if notice is proper, then the address obligations follow. the fact that Ms. Ko did not provide her address should not absolve the government of their responsibility of to provide effective and accurate notice that is that comports with requirements in the statute. The government would have you believe that that simply receipt of the NTA that includes the address obligations constitutes effective notice. They cited the case of Matter of GYR to support that. But Matter of GYR is distinguishable from the instant case. In Matter of GYR, they said that the notice to appear... I'm sorry, I see that my time is up.
No, finish up. You don't have any rebuttal, so finish up.
In Matter of GYR, the facts were different. In that case, the NTA actually did contain the date, time, and place of proceedings. This is unlike Ms. Ko's case, where the time and place of proceedings were omitted from her notice to appear. Because the right of proper notice is so important, any deficiency in the notice will result in a violation of due process rights. To prevent such a violation, we ask that the court grant petitioner's petition for review and reopen and remand the case for hearing on her adjustment application.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Coat.
Good morning. May it please the court. Larry Cody on behalf of the respondent, Attorney General Gonzalez. Yet again, we're faced with another motion to reopen case with several layers. However, in this case, the government believes that we can peel back that first layer, the law of case layer, and get right to the central issue before this court, which is whether or not the board abuses discretion in upholding the immigration judge's denial of petitioner's motion to reopen.
But Mr. you pronounce your last name Cody?
Cody, yes,
Cody. What worries me very much about immigration judge Zerbe's decision is what appears to be utterly unfounded and in fact erroneous factual assumptions that he makes, that he bases the decision on, where he says the documents that she's filed show that she's engaged in a pattern of deception, very least failed to notify, and he goes on to indicate that she's trying to manipulate the system so that she can wait until she's married, and of course the facts don't show that. She's 6 months earlier told them where she is, given them her correct address. There's no evidence that she's circumventing anything. He just without any opportunity for her, I mean, I'm worried about the fact that he doesn't say, I've decided to change the character of the hearing on this particular date instead of being the adjustment of status hearing, which is a perfectly legitimate kind of hearing to have, that on March 21st, 2003, we're going to consider instead whether the motion to reopen was properly granted by the Cincinnati judge. At that point, if he had said that, the government could have taken the position, no, it wasn't. He could, you know, she could have said, yes, it was. He could have made a decision based on a factual record that wasn't a bunch of assumptions on his part. And it seems like a very inappropriate way to proceed.
Your Honor, while there were several assumptions made by the immigration judge in his decision, he does hit the facts regarding the motion to reopen right on the head.
Well, no, he doesn't. He's wrong on a number of the facts, and it seems to me he becomes enraged because and you can tell from the language he uses in this oral opinion, because he thinks that this is a manipulator. He thinks that this is a person who's abusing the system, and yet there's no evidence of that before him. The only thing we know is that the immigration judge in Cincinnati, who had had some proceedings with her before, does grant the motion to reopen. You know, he's sort of maligns that judge. I don't know fairly or unfairly, since I don't know who that judge was. But he just sort of flies off the handle on this and doesn't sit down and figure out more rational ways to find out why the decision was made. And I have to say, it's a little rich for the board to be worrying about people who issued decisions without explanation. But be that as it may, this immigration judge, I think, has got the facts maybe right, maybe wrong, but we have no idea.
Your Honor, government's position is that those facts regarding whether or not she's gaming the immigration system or is ducking the INS or not, not really relevant to what we're looking at here. It's not relevant to whether or not the in absentia motion reopened should have been granted.
Well, you say that, but he seems to think they are relevant. I mean, maybe it's a question of how do we interpret his opinion, but the very last thing he says is, clearly the respondent has waited until she was eligible to become a permanent resident in the United States before deciding to bring the matter back to the court and to reveal her whereabouts. For the above reasons, I am reinstated. So, irrelevant?
And on top of that, Your Honor, we have a de novo review by the board here, so we're really looking at the board's decision. But
the board didn't look at the underlying facts. The board probably thought he had some evidence in front of him.
Your Honor, he did
How
have
does
evidence
the board
in front of
know?
Him. He had a certified return receipt showing that the NTA was served. He had an envelope sent back with the notice of hearing, from the notice of hearing that was sent back saying address unknown. So we have...
And did he have the evidence of the January 2000 filing in front of him?
He had the adjustment application in front of him, Your Honor, which on page 106 of the administrative record goes through the list of different addresses that petitioner lived at.
No, but did he have the January 2000 application for reinstatement of her F1 student status?
I do not know.
See, that's the problem. When you don't follow proper procedures, you might accidentally decide something on the basis of an incorrect record.
But Your Honor, that, again, the government's position would be that is irrelevant to whether or not the in absentia motion to reopen should have been granted. The immigration statute clearly says that we just look at whether or not there was proper notice, the reasons for not appearing, and whether or not the person is removable.
All right. Even if the immigration judge reverses the grant of a motion to reopen because he thinks there's been deception, even if there hasn't been, even if he's wrong, we don't care about factually wrong predicates for action.
It's not that we don't care, Your Honor. I think that's putting a little harsh spin on it.
Well, but that's right. I mean, your position is the only things we care about are this, this, and this, and so it doesn't really matter.
Actually,
if
Your Honor,
the immigration judge.
It's not my position. It's Congress's position.
I don't know.
8 U.S.C. 1229A5D, which
I don't think so, because Congress's position is also that there's discretion to be operated in granting or denying motions to reopen, and if that discretion is exercised on the basis of a faulty factual premise, there's a problem.
Well, Congress
doesn't say the immigration judges are automatons.
No, Your Honor, but Congress does say that review is confined to three distinct areas, and it's validity of the notice, the reasons for not appearing, and whether or not the alien is removable. So whether or not the alien had is eligible for asylum, cancellation, reinstatement of student status, it's all immaterial at this level.
At which level?
At where we are now.
Yeah, well,
at the appeals court level.
Let's go down a level, because it seems where the conflict is the Ohio IJ didn't make findings.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And petitioner mistakenly states that he did not grant granted a motion because the NTA was effective. Well, we don't know why.
Yeah, we don't know why. So neither does the Illinois IJ.
Correct.
Chicago IJ. But he makes some assumptions that are pretty harsh and doesn't bother to get into it and doesn't give any extension of time to at least verify, say, because they were there thinking the motion to reopen is not that that's passed and now they're going to be able to make their statement and then they can't. That seems to be what happened. Now, is it possible, I don't know about this law of the case stuff, but is it possible to remand to the Ohio IJ to have findings or else to have a new hearing on whether or not there's a validity for a motion to reopen?
Your Honor, remand is not necessary in this case. This court's decision.
Is it something that could have been done? Could the Chicago IJ could he have sent it back?
Your Honor, I don't believe that...
Because that's what his complaint was.
And I'm not 100% sure of this, but I don't believe that the immigration judge has the authority to remand a case like
so
that.
So he would have to make his own determination. He made his own determination.
He
just says that motion to reopen is invalid.
How can he not have the authority to transfer back? If the Cincinnati judge could transfer in the first instance to the Chicago judge, how could the Chicago judge not have the authority to transfer back to the Cincinnati judge?
I guess he may, Your Honor. I'm not sure on the law on that.
And it seems odd to think that lateral transfers couldn't occur when they do, in fact, all the time.
Right. But even so, this court's decisions on law of case matters clearly state that if there's the law of the case doesn't apply if a trial court is convinced that a prior ruling is wrong. And at this level, at the appellate level, we have the ability to review the second judge's decision. And so it would not make sense to remand this back for the first immigration judge to write a decision out that's going to come back up this way anyway. And that's pretty much this court's opinion in Williams v. Commissioner of INS, that we're not precluded from reviewing the decision that was made, so we're going to review it at this level. And that's what the government is asking, that this court deny the petitioner for review. Seeing any further questions, the government would submit on its briefs.
All right, thanks. And your time has expired, so we'll take the case under advisement.